The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
What do you do about the hundreds of millions of guns already out there?
Would you support a 70% individual marginal tax rate?
What would you do to ensure that women are paid fairly in this country?
And does the federal government have to play a role in dealing with it?
How would you address income inequality?
Who here would abolish their private health insurance in favor of... Would your plan cover abortion?
What have you done for Black and Latino voters?
How is this going to help farmers impacted by climate?
What will you actually do with these families? Will they be detained? Are you picking winners and losers? Yes, no, or pass.
So we've been listening to y'all talk about 2020 for the last few months.
The debates, the sound bites, the scandals.
And I gotta say, I'm a little frustrated.
Yeah, because we think they're asking the wrong questions of these candidates.
It's like they're trying to get a reaction.
Right.
Mm. But I'm trying to get a president. So all of this is reminding me of this qualification we have that we tend to call the beer test.
It's this idea that the only thing that you need to figure out whether or not someone can lead a nation is whether or not you'd pop a cold one with them.
Alternatively, our colleagues, Stead Herndon and John Caramonica and John Perellis, gave us, like, basically what you can appreciate as a playlist of what the candidates are playing at their events. And it can be, as you're going to think about who should be president, another thing to keep in mind that's
sure.
Maybe more productive than a beer test. And I just find that useful.
Oh, for sure. You get a little bit of insight. I mean, Kamala, the most hip-hop, no surprise. However, no Meg Thee Stallion. Really? Really? How tuned in are you, Ms. Harris? That's what I want to know.
Biden, obviously, evenly split between the number of Black and white artists.
He didn't make that playlist. He ain't make
but,
that.
But maybe he did. The playlist is doing the work of symbolizing the idea of the candidate.
We were inspired by our colleagues. So we decided to focus on some questions that we felt might get to the soul, into the deep depths. Right? Of who these folks are.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we're coming up with an alternative beer test.
So, without further ado, Wesley and Jenna bring you...
Still Processing's replacement beer test, basically.
Our rubric for leadership and democratic excellence.
Or that. We're talking about the Democrats right now because they're the only people having debates. But the minute these people who were trying to primary Donald Trump have some debates of their own, we will apply a Republican version of this test to them. But before we start, we got a nonpartisan disclaimer here. What's the point of Still Processing's rubric for leadership and democratic excellence? It does just roll off the tongue, by the way.
It sure does. It's not an exaggeration to say that the 2016 election changed everything. How we think about this country, how we think about this office, how we think about the electoral process.
So it'd be a shame to think about this election using a pre-2016 mindset. There's just too much at stake.
So we're trying to dig deeper as we ask ourselves who should have this job next and why.
I mean, not to be terribly dramatic.
Be dramatic!
Okay, you really can't be dramatic enough. God. Our future depends on it.
I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris. We're two culture writers at the New York Times, and we are drowning in presidential candidates, y'all!
And this is Still Processing.
There's something undefinable that beckons travelers back to the greater Fort Myers area in southwest Florida year after year. It feels like bare feet on soft white sand beaches that give way to gently lapping waves. It looks like the breathtaking abundance of wildlife, colorful birds, dolphins, manatees, and more, dwelling in lush mangrove ecosystems and translucent Gulf waters. It tastes like fresh coastal cuisine served at sunset at a waterfront restaurant. What will draw you back to Fort Myers? Go to visitfortmyers.com for more inspiration.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Okay, so question number one in Still Processing's rubric for leadership and democratic excellence, a.k.a. how much does a cup of coffee cost? Do you know?
Because what we're trying to ask with this question is, do you understand what the cost of living looks like for the average American around different parts of this country and not just San Francisco?
It's like, do you understand that a coffee house is a signifier in many neighborhoods in this country?
Right.
Of a gentrifying neighborhood.
Right.
And do you understand what the implications might be of even just having a Starbucks crop up in a neighborhood?
And what are you going to do to help citizens figure out how to live and be able to afford to live? I mean, it will surprise no one, but I make my own cold brew. You know, I like to do my own thing at home, but mostly because I don't want the coffee that I drink every day to encourage the morphing and gentrification of a neighborhood that I'm not trying to disrupt.
All right, so let's just pick a candidate. I'm just going to put my hand
in the hat,
pull somebody out. Up, Bill de Blasio.
Oh, Lord, Lord. Okay. I'm sure his coffee cost $1.99. I'm sure he celebrated. I'm sure he put it on a T-shirt just to let y'all know. This is how much I pay for my coffee.
Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City.
Working Americans deserve better. And I know we can do it because I've done it here in the largest, toughest city in this country. We're putting money back.
I think he's near the bottom of the Democratic polling. He might be paying $1.99 for that coffee, Jenna, but he's definitely paying $2.53 a gallon to drive all the way to Brooklyn to pick it up after he works out.
Oh my God.
I don't know. Maybe he knows how much it costs, but does he know how much it's costing the earth to get it?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
You know, everything with him is a gesture of weird selfishness. It's like he's a trying to virtue signal and let us know that he's a good guy, but usually those attempts just really reveal that he's self-serving and out of touch.
Andrew Yang.
Oh my God. Does Andrew Yang know how much a cup of coffee costs? Yo, Yang will be like, I give you $1,000 worth of coffee beans a year.
So my plan, the Freedom Dividend, would give every American adult $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year starting at age 18. This would create millions of jobs around the country and would allow families...
You know?
He doesn't even drink coffee. He's like, I will buy you $1,000 worth of coffee, but I'm sitting up here with a cabinet full of Soylent.
Yes.
Soylent for life, Soylent
yes.
forever. Yes, it's on a T-shirt.
Yes.
The album's coming out next fall, y'all. Andrew Yang, Soylent for life.
I also kind of want to know, what kind of milk do you think goes in their lattes? As like an extra credit bonus test.
This is the real test.
This is the real test.
This is the real test.
Because what type of milk you use says a lot about what you know about carbon footprints.
So, okay, I don't know. What is Kamala Harris in drought-prone California drink?
Let me tell you, right now, as far as I'm concerned, wars are being fought over oil. In a short time, they will be fought over water.
Aren't almonds supposed to be bad? Doesn't it take a lot of water to
A lot of water. Oat's good. She's not drinking soy or almond. Apparently, it's oat milk. Apparently, according to the AP, she drinks oat milk.
Oh.
So she's up. She's up to date. She's hip. She don't know about Meg, but she knows about Oatly. I mean, dang. She ain't driving the boat, but she knows about Oatly.
Okay, so who's drinking a glass of milk every night before they go to bed?
Ew.
Listen,
I know you do, and I'm still not amused by it.
But I broke up with milk. Is this day five with no milk?
Thank God. Well, Buttigieg loves a tall, frothy glass of milk before bed. First thing in the morning and the last thing at night. That's his favorite beverage.
Well, you know what's funny about milk, though? I mean, the reason that I probably drink it isn't for health reasons. It's for patriotism. right? Like, there's, I'm just saying, like milk is the thing you just saw in all kinds of Americana propaganda.
You've been programmed.
I mean, you're programmed. I am 5 days deprogrammed from milk.
Okay, great.
Anyway, let's move on to the next category. Number two in Still Processing's rubric for leadership and democratic excellence, a.k.a.
Ardil.
This is never going to get old.
This is my favorite question. How are you processing your trauma? How in touch with yourself are you? How does this inform your ability to serve our country? More or less, I want to know, do I want to do breath work with you?
Okay.
Can we sit side by side and process our trauma? Because I really want to know, how in touch with you are you?
Oh.
And how does this inform your ability to run our country? I have to say, like, this question is really about, are you stable and grounded enough to handle the levels of intensity of this office? As the great American prophet Lauryn Hill once said, how you gonna win if you ain't right within?
Listen, this might be the most important question. Isn't this the most important question?
It's like, so deep.
Because historically, the version of this question is, do you trust this person to have a button that could blow up the world?
Yes. Can you be trusted to press a button if other people can still access all your internal buttons? You know what I'm saying? That's what I want to know.
Okay. I'm throwing you a fastball.
Okay. I'm ready.
Amy Klobuchar, senator from Minnesota, wants this job in the Oval Office. Now, I actually like Amy. She seems really competent.
The president literally went on TV on Fox and said that people's heads would spin when they see how much he would bring down pharmaceutical prices. Instead, 2,500 drugs have gone up in double digits since he came into office.
In the debate, she might be the most succinct question answerer and the least greedy. Like, she doesn't get a lot of time to talk, but when she does, she makes the most of it.
That's what we call at home, all foam and no beer.
Anyway, there are these rumors out there about her temperament.
Okay, so in February of this year, there was the infamous salad comb incident in which, after an aide forgot to bring her utensils to eat her salad on a short flight, she ate her salad with a comb. And when she was done, she handed it to him and said, clean it. I mean, honestly,
do you believe this story?
I do. And I'm a little turned on by it, which is part of the problem. She said, clean it.
I mean, she has spoken about how hard it is to be a boss and that she can be hard on people sometimes.
But some of the details.
All right. So, right. Okay.
I mean, there's a difference between tough and tough, you know? I
mean. So our colleagues, Matt Flagenheimer and Cindy Ember, wrote the salad comb story. And there's this one detail in the story that does make me think about Miss Amy. She was known to throw office objects in frustration. I'm not going to make it through this without...
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
It's not okay.
But wait, Jenna, why are we laughing?
It's like Ripley's Believe It or Not, though. Like, you just don't believe people behave like this after the age of two.
She was known to throw office objects in frustration, including binders and phones, in the direction of aides. Low-level employees were asked to perform duties they described as demeaning, like washing her dishes or other cleaning.
Yeah.
A possible violation of Senate ethics rules, according to veterans of the chamber. All right, now look.
That's a little sus.
You've been Devil Wears Prada before, haven't you?
I have, but I'm not sure I want the devil to run the country, whether or not they're in Prada.
But don't you think a little bit of this...
So she ain't passed the test. At the end of the day, she ain't passed the test. She ain't breathing. She'll know about the in and out. She'll know about 1, 2, 4, 5 breathing. She'll know about square breathing. She'll know about pranayama. She'll know about yoga nidra. That's okay.
But is there hope for a person like this with breath work? I mean, if...
Yes,
can,
of course. Of course. Go to tarbach.com. She'll walk you through it. Okay, moving on. Cory Booker.
Oh, boy.
I feel like if someone asks Cory Booker about breath work, if he checks in with himself, if he's processed his trauma, his childhood imprinting, you know, and how that can help him better lead the nation, I feel like old Booker would respond with, like, trying to say something in Sanskrit. I feel like he'd turn around and, like, take off his shirt and reveal that his entire back is covered in Sanskrit, but it would all be, like, a little bit off and no one ever had the guts to tell him.
But the thing about Cory Booker for me is I'm trying to understand why there's so much of him that grates me so hard.
Well, you can't speak to authenticity. No, you've just got to be who you are. And they're going to be critics all the time.
He seems like a hologram. He's like not really there. You know what I mean? He's like not practicing deep listening, I feel.
Well, it's not just that he doesn't listen, but he's constantly overreacting. So just to be clear to everybody, we're talking about these people in the debates. We are talking about a TV show put on by the news networks starring these people. And Cory Booker is basically playing the overpracticed student who has no sense of humor but thinks he has a sense of humor and is prone to overdo everything with overreaction.
If this were a fictional movie, he'd be played by Keegan-Michael Key, 100%. Like, this is a Key character.
I think that Keegan-Michael Key could also get the political roid rage that Cory Booker is always seemingly in.
And it's weird because we're not, like, speculating about his sexuality or talking about his race. He always seems, like, a little bit off. Like, he kind of feels like if I got the political package on Sims 4, like, he would be a character. He, for real, seems like a Sims character.
He looks kind of animatronic sometimes, too, when he gets up there and is feeling his fire.
You definitely get the sense that there are traumas still running through him. We, and probably he, just doesn't know what they are, which is why I feel like the breathwork is important, and it's clear to me that he has not done the work.
He can be personable enough to fake a beer test. I do not doubt that, right? But I also wonder whether or not this man can actually do genuine, prolonged, introspective, spiritual work. And therefore, I mean, you just can't fake a breathwork test.
Facts. What do we think about Elizabeth Warren?
Oh.
How would she do with the breathwork question?
Elizabeth Warren is interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because as you know, as many people know, last year, she put out this ad. And she was supposed to confirm her native ancestry in response primarily to the president's doubting her and her native heritage, right? So she comes under fire from all kinds of people, namely and especially members of the indigenous Native community, for basically reducing her identity to a DNA test, which the Cherokee Nation Secretary of State Chuck Hoskin Jr. described as inappropriate and wrong. That's a quote.
There's a very long and ugly history in this country of Native groups being denied certain government protections of their land and sovereignty because of genetic understandings of race.
Indianness isn't defined by DNA, as the writer Nick Estes writes. It's a legal, social, cultural, and historical construct where indigenous nations self-define the parameters of belonging.
Two snaps. And we'll link to a more extensive syllabus for those who want to learn more in our show notes, because it's really interesting and important stuff to learn about.
But hold up. Plot twist. Elizabeth Warren apologized.
And look, it's not up to me or to you to forgive her, but she actually did a pretty good job of just being very direct, very forthcoming, very accountable, and apologizing. And I don't know if someone can be that vulnerable and drop their ego in an extraordinarily hypervisible way without having had some practice of taking a pause, breathing, reflecting, and committing to doing better. Yo, she's doing the work to be better.
Like anyone who's being honest with themselves, I know that I have made mistakes.
It wasn't just one apology. This woman is apologizing in public every day.
Wow.
I am sorry for harm I have caused. I have listened and I have learned a lot. And I am grateful for the many conversations that we've had together.
Last month, she was at an indigenous forum where she gave, I think, maybe the best speech she's ever given on this subject, an apology for doing what she did and saying she was going to be willing and there for indigenous people going forward. That's more than most candidates have ever done.
I know. Like ever
in recognition
in the history of this country.
Right.
Oh, God.
Who's next?
I mean, I know old girl did not make it to the next round of debates, but we cannot move past breathwork without talking about the one and only Marianne Williamson.
And what would Ms. Marianne say?
She'll need the breathwork, but she's teaching the damn class. But then she would also stop halfway through and be like, listen, I need you all to stop misrepresenting what I'm trying to say. Like, she's very invested in the breathwork as an idea because she's trying to get all of us to forgive her for all the controversial things she said about vaccines. She called antidepressants a scam. And then she also said you can use God's love to cure cancer and HIV/AIDS. Like, what?
Okay, but I'm not defending any of that, but she seems very easy to misconstrue contextually,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
It's very easy to just take what she says out of context.
Very true.
But she's also said some pretty crazy things, too, that, like, need no context.
She did recently compare herself to a migrant waiting at the border. I mean, she said later, she was trying to say that she's an outsider to politics, like, in the same way that Trump is calling migrants outsiders. But it was a bad analogy. It was a bad analogy. At the same time, only candidate to bring up Flint, which still doesn't have clean water. I mean, that's major.
My response on the Flint water crisis is that Flint is just the tip of the iceberg. I was recently in Denmark, South Carolina, where there is a lot of talk about it being the next Flint.
So she isn't even a stopped clock that's right twice a day. She's right more than twice a day.
It's true.
And then when she does say something that's like sounds radical, but is actually just the truth,
right.
That gets taken out of context and used against her to make her crazy Marianne.
This is part of the dark underbelly of American society. The racism, the bigotry, and the entire conversation that we're having here tonight, if you think any of this wonkiness is going to deal with this dark psychic force of the collectivized hatred that this president is bringing up in this country, then I'm afraid that the Democrats are going to see some very dark days.
Like the time she used the very insightful phrase, dark psychic force, to talk about what's emboldening 45 to perpetuate environmental racism. It just seemed like crazy old Marianne, but she was actually onto something.
It might be the most profound thing that anybody has said during any of these debates. And in saying it, Marianne Williamson was speaking the triple truth, Ruth.
That's deep. Well, we have a few more categories, but we're going to take a quick break. And then we'll continue with Still Processing, the Rubric for Leadership and Democratic Excellence.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments. Ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building. Finds an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Okay, we're back. We're on to the next part of this replacement beer test of ours. Question number three. The I word. Impeachment? No. Immigration? Nuh-uh.
No. What we want to know is, do you know what the I stands for in LGBTQIA+?
Because there's no world leader on the planet that can get through those words without losing a year of their life. Without, you know what, they do this thing where they're like, they start to do the L... G, and they lean forward a little bit and they start to squint. L, G, B? They're either like in the script spelling bee or at an eye exam.
Right.
You don't know which it is.
Right. They start on the journey all confident, like strolling, like, I got this. L, B, T, and then they start to sweat and you see them get really nervous. Teeth start falling out. Their eyes start glazing over. I mean, apparently at some point there was a Republican candidate who talked about the BLT community. And who can forget when Cory Booker was like,
we do not talk enough about trans Americans, especially African-American trans-Americans, and the incredibly high rates of murder right now. We
don't talk about like, good on him for bringing up the very real and deep and important issue of the safety of Black trans people. But also, if you're gonna virtue signal, make sure you know which blinker you're putting on. Like, get it right. Get it right. What we want to know is, are these candidates committed to the communities that they're talking about? Or are they just using them as buzzwords, which they can't even get right? By the way, the I stands for intersex. Do your homework. Pencils down. Anyway.
So, what's a little extra credit question here?
Okay.
It's the fist bump question.
Like, which candidates would do a fist bump, and does that feel racist?
Okay, let's just throw some names out there. There's really only one name.
There's really only one name.
Joe Biden.
Old Joe.
We have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
Jesus Christ, Joe. I mean, really. What the hell?
Former Vice President of these United States of America, Joe Biden, leading in the polls, the person that Donald Trump is, like, simultaneously most afraid to face and most excited to face, Scratchy Joe.
Revealing a whole lot about himself in that Freudian slip.
Was it even Freudian?
No.
It was just a...
Subconscious confirmation bias.
This is the epitome of the Joe Biden problem.
Apparently Obama told him, Joe, you know you don't have to do this, right? And he was talking about the 2020 election, but I also think he was talking about fist bumps. I think there was more than one thing in that coded in that message.
Beto O'Rourke.
I feel like Beto would try to hit the whoa or drop a Millie Rock, and he'd be so bad at it, but everyone would be like, ah! Just because he's white and kind of cute. You know what I mean? It would just be this thing that, like, no one cares about his policies, but like, he got Millie Rock, you know? It's like, ugh.
Oh my God, it's the Pete Buttigieg speaks Norwegian of the bate.
Exactly.
Vamos a tratar cada persona con el respeto y dignidad que merecen como humanos. We
would not. But, I mean, he is a fluent Spanish speaker, Beto O'Rourke. And he's not performing the Spanish the way Cory Booker does when he tries to speak Spanish. Okay, speaking of Mr. Cory, remember that time in the last round of debates?
There was nothing done to deal with the police department that was corrupt.
Where Joe Biden was pressing Cory Booker about why Cory Booker didn't do more about police corruption in Newark, New Jersey, his state, as senator.
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor. You need to...
And Booker... then drops what became instantly infamous as the Kool-Aid line.
Jeez. I've been trying to forget it. I'm trying to forget it, and I can't stop thinking about it.
But it was, man, it was just embarrassing.
For him.
Well, I mean,
to clarify.
I mean, no, Jenna. It was
embarrassing. He doesn't embarrass me. He doesn't represent me.
That's because you live in New York. But if you lived in Newark, you'd definitely be hanging your head down low. He would have embarrassed you.
Oh, my gosh.
That was way more blackness than that moment called for. And what he was trying to do was not answer Biden's, like, completely, perfectly legitimate question about what is going on with police corruption.
True.
I mean, God forbid what the next round of debates where Biden brings up the water crisis in Newark and Cory Booker's like, all in the Kool-Aid and don't know the flavor.
Oh, my gosh. Unacceptable.
Mr. Cory. You used your blackness as a get-out-of-jail-free card. I don't think Joe Biden needs to be in Newark to know Newark has a police corruption problem. He can read the newspaper.
That's right.
My problem with this is that he is basically weaponizing blackness. Mm-hmm. And there's just more to it, blackness, I mean, than being a tool for zingers and gotchas.
Oh, of course. And at the same time, it's interesting because on one hand, you have someone like Cory who's weaponizing their blackness. But I'm also really interested in how some of the candidates are starting to talk about whiteness.
I think as a white woman of privilege, it is also my responsibility to lift up those voices that aren't being listened to. And I can talk to those white women in the suburbs that voted for Trump and explain to them what white privilege actually is. That when their son is walking down a street with a bag of M&Ms in his pocket, wearing a hoodie, his whiteness is what protects him from not being shot.
And though I know that Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is out of the running, I do appreciate the way she was trying to acknowledge white identity as well as her attempt to try to unpack it. Let's hope the rest of them follow her example.
And I actually think that we are in this moment where, like, this election is going to be run on race. And the president is racializing everything. I think that whoever is facing him is going to have to be conversant in how to talk positively about race and racism and understand their place the way Kirsten Gillibrand appears to about your whiteness and what effect that has.
And not deny that it exists.
And not deny that you even have a race.
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
You're running as a white person. You better understand what that means.
That's right.
Question number four. Facebook. Do you know how to use Facebook?
Listen, this technology and software is terraforming the world. And we really need a politician who understands it so they can talk about regulating it and deconstructing it and disempowering it.
That's just true. Because you say that and my brain immediately goes to Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes.
He went to Congress and testified on behalf of all the wrongs Facebook had committed in terms of the election. And it will just pick a thing that Facebook did wrong. He went to atone for it. And at some point, this like brutal cross-examination that he was supposed to undergo, they were supposed to turn him into some grilled shrimp.
Right.
But instead, what did it turn into?
If I'm emailing within WhatsApp, does that ever inform your advertisers?
No, we don't see any of the content in WhatsApp. It's fully encrypted.
Well, it turned into like customer support. And it was really embarrassing to realize how little the people that run this country actually know about this software and its impact on this country.
Facebook systems do not see the content of messages being transferred over WhatsApp.
Yeah, I know, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking about whether these systems talk to each other without a human being touching it.
But at the same time, it was an incredible own to just like turn Mark Zuckerberg into like tech support, into IT help. You know, he went home to everybody in America's parents' house for Christmas and they were like turning to him and handing him their phone. And he's like, I'm not that guy. And they're like, FaceTime's not working. And he's like, again, not the guy. I didn't build that one. And they're like, Mark, my laptop's slow. And he's like, OMG, not that guy. I thought that was hilarious.
I don't know who's going to be a good candidate in this respect because they don't talk enough about Facebook.
Like, only Yang.
Only Yang. I mean, you're speaking
he's
the truth
only
again.
Yang. He's the only one that knows what's
That's
going
the name
on.
Of my album, by the way. Only Yang. Only Yang. Lastly, this is important.
Okay. This is heavy hitting stuff.
Memes. Memes.
Memes. I mean, at the end of the day, no matter who wins this next election, they will share the same fate. They will be subject to the basis of many a cultural conversation, the bulk of which will be memes. And what those memes generate for the next 4 years says a lot about how our country is perceived around the world. Presidential memes are essentially shorthand for just the general temperature and tone of our foreign relationships.
No, this is true.
And do we feel good about how they're distilled into a meme?
Right. I mean, I have two qualifications for president. One is, are they racist? And, you know, what can I do about that? Like, you know, I feel that it's true, it's real, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's a number one thing for me. The other thing is, what happens when this person gets off a plane in another country?
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to be coming back to me via the nightly news or Twitter?
Right.
What thing is President XYZ going to be caught doing, like, over and over in a 3-second loop?
I mean, you're asking, do they make their constituents proud? I'm personally very tired of taxi drivers in other countries laughing at me when they find out I'm an American. Like, that's happening. That's been happening.
It's been happening. So this is an important thing. Who do you want to be trapped at a dinner party talking about for the next 4 years?
I mean, the real question we're asking is, whose memes would not embarrass us? Would we be all LOL about it? Or would we be that, like, really crooked-lipped, that crazy new faced emoji that's barfy, pink-cheeked, don't know what's going on, but it ain't good type feeling? Is the joke on them or is the joke on us?
And that concludes Still Processing's rubric for leadership and democratic excellence, a.k.a.
rule digging.
Just keep this in mind as you're making your way through the next year. I think it'll come in handy.
Enjoy.
Still Processing is a product of the New York Times.
It is produced by Nina Patek.
Our editors are Sasha Weiss and Lisa Tobin.
Our engineer is Jake Gorski.
And our theme music is by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
You can find all of our episodes and various things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing.
And you know we love a good review, so leave us one on Apple Podcasts, please.
Bye.